This is Background Briefing, and I'm Ian Masters, and I'm speaking with Daniel Sowa, who is a senior fellow at the Center for Transatlantic Relations at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Previously, he was the vice president for Centers of Peacebuilding and Innovation at the United States Institute for Peace. From 1994 to 1996, he served as U.S. Special Envoy and Coordinator for the Bosnian Federation, mediating between Croats and Muslims and negotiating the first agreement reached at the Dayton Peace Talks. He also blogs at peacefair.net. And what do you make of these extraordinary stories coming out of Kosovo? They've been coming out for some time because of an inquiry by a Swiss senator, but now the Council on Europe is calling for an investigation, and so too is the president of Serbia.
It's hard to know what to make of these allegations. They've actually been around for a long time before the most recent reports. They've circulated in Belgrade for a long time. There has been no proper forensic investigation conducted, and therein lies the biggest problem. We don't, you know, without that, it's hard to know even whether a crime was committed. And that's the first thing we need to know. So I entirely agree with the Council of Europe's plea for a serious forensic investigation, one that includes witness protection for those people who are willing to speak out.
But the allegations so far, though, are explosive in as much as the Prime Minister of the government that we put in power is accused of heading up a gang who engaged in organ transplants from captured Serbs towards the end of the war with Serbia, and he of course was then with the Kosovo Liberation Army. You couldn't have, I think, a more if this is true, you could not have a more embarrassing situation where somebody that we put in power turns out to be up to this kind of activity.
Well, it would be wrong to say that we put him in power. Hashim Thaci is the popularly, democratically elected prime minister of Kosovo. At the end of the war, we did not put him in power. In fact, quite to the contrary, we insisted on municipal elections being held first. His party did quite poorly in those initial municipal elections, and he was not himself in power for some years. I think he first came to power 4 years ago.
Well, Daniel Sowa, again, senior fellow at the Center for Transatlantic Relations at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. I suppose the broader question here is, I remember during the Balkans wars, a number of them, of course, initially Croatia and then Bosnia and then Kosovo, there was, of course, on the Serbian side, they kept saying, you know, NATO is helping put in these horrible mafia regimes, and as far as I could tell, as far as I think any reasonable person could tell, is that that was the pot calling the kettle black, given that Serbia was kind of a mafia regime led by Milosevic, who looted the treasury and then emptied the jails and gave these militias, you know, free rein in slaughtering all these civilians, which led to the genocide at Srebrenica, etc. So try and give us a sense here of whether, you know, I mean, I'm not suggesting we back the wrong side here, but when you look at that region, who are the exemplars of democracy and who are the kind of mafia states?
Well, I wouldn't give anybody very high marks on the democratic scale in the Balkans at this point, though I do think that both in Serbia and in Kosovo, you have relatively open and democratic systems, but neither one is perfect. And Kosovo recently had some difficulty conducting its own elections. It was conducting its own elections really for the first time because they had always been conducted, at least in part, by international organizations previously. And they did have some troubles with ballot box stuffing and that kind of thing. Serbia still has problems with pressures being brought to bear on the press, and such problems exist also in Kosovo. None of these are exemplars of democracy. What they are is regimes in transition, we hope, towards democracy, and part of that transition is holding people accountable for whatever they may have done in the past. And I can't tell you that Hashim Thaçi did these things that were alleged against him in the past. If he did, he has to be held accountable for that. If he didn't, though, he has to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. So my view here is, yes, we need an investigation. We need a serious, objective, well-equipped investigation, but we shouldn't jump to premature conclusions.
And Daniel Sowa, do you think we will get such an investigation?
I think there will be an investigation conducted by the European Union's Rule of Law Mission in Kosovo. It will need extensive cooperation from the Kosovar authorities as well as Kosovar individuals and from the government of Albania, because the alleged crimes were actually committed mainly in Albania. You know, it's very much my hope that that cooperation will be forthcoming, because I think it's only a serious investigation of that sort that can either clear people's names or establish that they did these things that are wrong. You know, Croatia is about to enter the EU. Its former prime minister is being charged with corruption right now. We should see that, it seems to me, as a sign of the growing respect for rule of law, not as a sign that somehow there's something profoundly and genetically wrong with people who are in the Balkans, that they're all mafiosi or they're all corrupt. You are going to see in the next decade or so, for sure, a number of people who were once heroes showed up as having done criminal things, and that has already happened, in fact, in Bosnia and elsewhere. So this is part of the process of the rule of law establishing itself, and we have to be respectful of the rule of law, which does require the assumption of innocence until people are proven guilty.
But Daniel, so looking back on these wars that you helped bring an end to, and you were involved in the Dayton Peace Accords, etc., are we left with this impression that certainly at the time we were told this was all about ethnicity and religious, not about ethnicity, because everybody was the same, had the same DNA, but this is about religion and history and the brutality during World War II of the Croats against the Serbs, and all of this stuff was the cauldron that we were told about. But the more we look at it, it felt like, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of Milosevic and company, that these people were warlords. So I'm still trying to, just in the broader context, get a sense of you know, what really drove these things. I don't believe that these people are inherently brutal and genocidal, but I think in any society, when criminals take over, criminal actions happen.
Well, that's exactly right. The rule of law failed in Bosnia completely. The police forces broke up along ethnic lines. Ethnic lines is the right term in the case of Bosnia. And I never believed, however, that it was all about ethnicity or history. It was about power. It was about political power and how to keep it in your own hands. And as communism fell, you couldn't keep it in your own hands by being a communist. You kept it in your own hands by becoming a nationalist, which is what Milosevic did. And that had consequences. It had a reaction in Croatia. It had a reaction among the Bosniaks of Bosnia. And it had a reaction among the Albanians of Kosovo. And Milosevic's nationalism is which was a very insincere nationalism, admittedly, is in some ways what precipitated a lot of the problem, because he essentially was saying and said very clearly when he tries to chase the Albanians from Kosovo that these people are no longer citizens of Serbia. They can't be because they're Albanians. And, you know, that was his way of holding on to power. Well, he's gone now, and people in the Balkans now decide who holds on to power at the ballot box, not the way Milosevic wanted to decide. And I think that's a good thing. But it will take time to reconstruct the rule of law and to be in a position to say that this will never happen again.
Thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Daniel Sowa.
It's my pleasure.
Again, I was speaking with Daniel Sowa, who is a senior fellow at the Center for Transatlantic Relations at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Previously, he was the vice president for the Centers for Peacebuilding Innovation at the United States Institute for Peace. And from 1994 to 1996, he served as U.S. Special Envoy and Coordinator for the Bosnian Federation, mediating between Croats and Muslims and negotiating the first agreement reached at the Dayton Peace Accords. He also blogs at peacefair.net.